Toby tapped a stylus on his desk. Zori could not be a traitor. That was a given. Zori had, however, taught him some words that appeared in a pirate transmission. That was a fact. Now that Stella knew that Zori knew some words, Stella was half convinced of her guilt. Zori's father had taught Zori those words, and Zori's father gave him a sick feeling in his stomach. He'd assumed it was what any boy felt around the father of the girl he loved, but maybe not. Maybe the man was a traitor. That didn't mean Zori was. Zori's father could be a traitor. Both her parents could be traitors, and Zori could still be innocent. Zori's father could have learned a few words, the ones he'd taught Zori, from someone else. Maybe he wasn't a traitor. But if Stella told the government about Zori, then nobody would believe her innocence. But he had to find a way to save her from that. The first step was to find out if she knew all the words in the transmission, because that would mean she could translate the transmissions. If they went to the government themselves, then she could be a hero who translated pirate lingo, not a suspect. But Stella had forbidden him to show Zori the transcripts or tell her what was going on. And if, he didn't want to think this, but he could not help it, if she was guilty, if her father was a traitor and had raised her to be one too, then showing her the transcripts would be as dangerous as Stella said.
How can I find out if she knows more than the little she's taught me without breaking Stella's rule?
A flash of worry that Zori might not like what he was thinking of doing was easy to banish. He was doing it for her, to protect her. And unless she was a traitor, and she could not be a traitor, that was a given, she would understand and agree if, when, she found out. Zori approached Toby before Matt the next day.
My parents like you.
Toby couldn't answer. He just nodded.
Is your cousin causing problems?
Not exactly. She says she thought you told your father about my escort.
She thinks my father is lying? That's an insult.
She didn't say that.
Actually, she had said that, but Toby was not going to admit it. Zori settled back, lips tight. Then she looked at Toby again.
I need to talk to you.
We can start this lesson when everyone is attentive.
That was Sir Galvin. Toby looked up just in time to avoid a mark for discourtesy. During break, Zori and Toby ignored the nudges and winks of the rest of their class and backed into a corner with their snacks. Toby's escorts were nearby, but in the noise of the break room, they could not be overheard. Probably.
What?
My father says he likes you, but sometimes he's just a little sneaky.
Sneaky?
I mean, yes, it would be an insult if your cousin said he was lying about her, having told him about your escort. And if she insults him, then he has a legal claim against her. And if he has a legal claim against her, then obviously he won't let me see you. He might even take me out of school.
So, you think he's he said that in order to find a way to make us break up?
Maybe. It's not always discourteous to lie. It's wrong, but it's not against the courtesy code. Not if you're not under oath.
Wait a minute. You mean it's fine to lie, but wrong to complain that you've been lied to?
I wouldn't say fine. It's just not a discourtesy, whereas calling someone a liar is.
But if they are lying and you know it, how are you supposed to handle it?
You can ignore it if it's not important, or you can report it if it's a criminal matter, or you can ask for a formal statement before a legal representative. That can be phrased without discourtesy.
I think that would make it worse. If you ask for that, aren't you in effect calling someone a liar in front of others?
No, not in our society. But anyway, if your cousin ever needs to challenge my father, she needs to do it properly. Get legal counsel.
And what do you think?
You're asking me to indict my father?
No, I'm asking what you think.
You don't understand. I can't answer that. It would be wrong. Worse than Pratt.
Look, can we meet after school? You have a free period last, don't you?
Yes, but I can't meet you then. I promised my mother I'd go to some boring woman's meeting with her. I can get out after dinner, though, as long as I'm home by 9. We could meet for ice cream or something.
Toby looked into her eyes. Zori was trustworthy. She had to be. She loved him, and it was important to get this translated.
I'm trying to write an adventure story in whatever it is you've been teaching me.
My family's secret language? Why?
Someday it will be our language. The way we've been saying things, you know. You've been speaking it for years. I'm trying to learn it. You know I'm more visual than you are. It'll be easier for me if I write it down. And you said you didn't have any texts.
I don't think anyone writes in it. It's just for chat.
If your father uses it for business, maybe he writes memos in it.
I suppose. But you're writing in it?
Trying to. I'm not very good at it. I thought it would be easier if I did it as a story. The dialogue so far sounds more like one of those adventure series for children. Well, except for the rude words. And I made up a bunch of words, too, because I don't know enough.
Can I see it?
Toby had put together a mishmash of the words he knew, a few he remembered, a few that he had guessed, and some he made up.
I guess. It's a space battle. All this part is the bad guys, with the rude words you taught me. It's easy to do their side. And I'm not sure of the spelling in a lot of places.
You're making excuses. Let's see. Wow, you've learned a lot. I don't remember teaching you some of this.
It's mostly made up, where I didn't know the words.
Toby had inserted a few made-up words into the text Kai had sent. This was only about a page of a transmission, with interpolated plot. Zori pointed.
But this really is the word for ammunition. Lucky guess, Toby.
She grinned, then went back to reading, while Toby's heart seemed to sink through his shoes. She knew more words.
Why would her father teach her the word for ammunition anyway?
No profit in this. Get out of here now. I like that. So the pirates are running away from... Well, who are the good guys?
Space Rangers, of course. Who else?
This is wrong, this bit here. You made up Blaggern, didn't you?
Yes. It's supposed to mean defeat.
No, that's Randic. Randic Msendum would be losing a bid to another bidder. This bit here means lost too many ships to that... I didn't teach you that word.
Oh, does it really mean anything?
A very bad word for a woman. Who is she supposed to be?
One of the good guy captains.
Oh, then that's Kobe Parash. Means one of our captains. The other is just nasty.
Zori handed the hand comp back.
Oh, I hope my father doesn't find out you're writing stories in our trade tongue, Toby. Don't publish it. Especially not with all those really rude words.
No, I wouldn't.
No doubt now that Zori's father's trade tongue was that used by the pirates. He could not doubt Zori, but her father. If Stella's father could turn out to be Osman Vada, anyone's father might be an enemy. Kai Vada reset the controls in Vanguard's fully programmable small arms range and slipped another magazine into her Rossi Smith. She aimed at the lowest of the five targets, something with tentacles. A green light blinked.
Most of the pure target shooting I did was learning to shoot from my parents.
Another target, the next higher, something with teeth. Another green light.
Then I did some hunting. Not a lot, and some of it was archery.
Another target. This one, an armored spacesuit. Another green light.
Your turn, Major.
No, thanks. I'm past my peak. Another time.
Kai nodded, shut down the system, and reset the ventilation.
Back to Turek. My guess is that he'll start going directly for ship manufacturers. He's got Bissonette, and they make their own warships, but not very big ones. And the capacity for the largest ships was limited to only about 5 a year. You blew a year's production in one battle.
So he'd be looking for facilities that manufacture large ships in quantity?
Yes. Not many planetary space forces need those. Smaller ships are sufficient for most in-system jobs, handling the kind of pirate incursions most of us saw before Turek. So there hasn't been a large market for them, and it's been saturated by just a few manufacturers. I strongly recommend contacting those entities when we come back out of FTL and seeing if they've had any thefts, attacks, or even large orders recently.
And recently would be...
Within the past 2 or 3 standard years, the big ships take that long to complete.
Some systems might order larger ships now that they've seen the menace. We need a better way of detecting the wrong kind of order, don't we?
Well, my recommendation would be to see what orders have been made. Quantities, payment sources, and so on. And then look for anomalies. The Moscow Confederation may have useful data.
At some point, Turek is going to run out of his own resources. There can't be enough pirates in the universe to crew hundreds of ships, govern all the territory he's conquered, do all the mundane chores that a fleet needs done. Who would join forces with someone like that if they weren't under direct threat?
A good question. I would say criminal organizations, but they're a minority of the population. They are good at intimidating more people, though. Major political or religious movements?
There's the anti-Humods.
Like the people on Gretna. But I don't know how prevalent that view is. The militant side of it, I mean. The anti-Humods I grew up with were harmless, just very earnest and ready to explain how the real human race was disappearing.
We have some concerns. Our intel has been watching a couple of seriously anti-Humod governments over the past 10 years or so. They could be a source of funding if Tura convinces them he's anti-Humod and out to restore the position so-called real humans deserve. If any of the governments on our list are the ones ordering warships, I'd be concerned.
Well, until we come out of FTL, we can't even ask the questions. Nor can I pick Captain Yamini's brains, since he's on another ship. So let me bounce another set of ideas off you, if you don't mind. And that's how best to use the slender tactical advantage we have of being able to tap Turek's transmissions and operate in channels he doesn't have. We hope.
Down jump 15 minutes. Secure for down jump.
Time flies. I cut it too close. I'll see you on the bridge. She was there with 5 minutes to spare. Nothing should be here. This was just a convenient mapped jump point far from anything habitable or worth mining. There should be an Ansible, though, for the convenience of passing ships like theirs. Or the enemies. As she'd ordered at the start of the voyage, weapons went live at T-2. Ransom should be out now, advance scout for them. A minute crawled by, then another, then Vanguard lurched out of FTL into normal space. Scan blurred by down-jump turbulence.
Nothing so far. Empty as a beer bottle in the morning and the Ansible's live.
Well, that's good. Argelos, Yamini, Pettigrew, and Baskerville all reported in within 15 seconds of their expected time. The three lighter ships micro-jumped out to keep watch. Kai had allotted 2 hours here, time to strip the news from the Ansible, share it, even discuss it, but she didn't plan to have everyone clustered and vulnerable. The automated Ansible had a minimal number of system boosters, but Ransom, reckless as always, micro-jumped within a quarter second of the Ansible itself, stripped out the news bulletins, and shared them with the others immediately. The image of a man in crimson and black came up on the screen.
That's Turek. We've seen a picture of him before.
Interesting choice of postures. Notice, no podium, no column. The only scale to measure him is the sky and the stars. The way he's folded his arms, it's like something off a poster or a book cover. He's claiming authority.
You will all know my name. You will all fear my name. I am Gamus Turek.
Insanity? Why would he send out something like this now?
Well, let's listen. They listened to the rest of it, watched the massacre of civilians, the town burning. Next came bulletins from different news services, commenting on Turek's speech.
Save those. We don't have much time. Let's consider Turek's own statement first. Why would he give his name now? Remember that spy with the suicide trigger who died saying his name?
He's worried. Something has shaken his confidence in his plan.
I don't know why. We've bloodied his nose a couple of times, but no worse than that. So far, he's won every system he's attacked.
That we know of. He might have been unsuccessful somewhere.
I agree. But even if he hasn't had a major loss, he would be running into some problems of scale by now. I don't care how many ships he's got to have crew for them. Reliable crew. Lots more than he started with. And he's got to have supplies for them, and munitions, or the ships are useless for war. That's a lot of resources. It isn't just the money, it's also the market. Where can he go for resupply?
If he's got allies among the anti-Humod systems, That may be his funding source. They could also be hauling his supplies in commercial vessels.
Jeffrey Baines, practical tactics for regional conflicts.
Kai stared at the screen, confused. Douglas smacked his forehead.
Yes. That's what I was thinking of. That's his playbook. That's what he's been using. And that picture of Baines, the frontispiece, all dressed up in some kind of costume.
The Royal Irregulars, blue and yellow instead of maroon and black.
Explain, please. I don't remember that source in our tactical studies.
You wouldn't, because we didn't use it. Baines wasn't actually military. He was an enthusiast, an amateur historian. His tactical instincts were good, but he didn't really understand modern space warfare.
It's been effective for Turek so far.
Yes, but Baines doesn't go beyond the elementary. Look, you've been able to defeat his people even when you were outnumbered. You picked up his tactical approach right away. You were able to improvise something effective against him.
Why didn't he use something else?
Maybe he doesn't know which to use. Most sources now assume a force with certain proportions of ship types he may not have. Or maybe he can't get his people to understand them.
Or he doesn't trust them. He started with criminals, pirates, and station side both. People so unreliable, he had to implant them with suicide triggers to be sure they wouldn't blab his name.
He's got instant communication. And people he doesn't completely trust, well, that's going to constrain his tactics, isn't it?
Absolutely. And inhibit his subordinates, and annoy them, too.
Lee looked up from the pilot's seat.
Down jump turbulence.
Hugh turned to look at the screen himself as other ships reported the same.
Estimates? By the turbulence, big and fast.
Lee looked at Kai. Douglas, to one side, looked as though he wanted to speak, but didn't. We run. Hugh looked surprised, but Douglas gave a tiny nod. Priorities getting to Cascadia. Close formation. Jump on my mark. Come out at the next jump point in the same formation as here. Weapons hot. And immediately go into yellow 3.
She waited as they acknowledged, and Teddy Ransom micro-jumped back to his place, then gave them the signal.
What do you think that was?
Worst case, pursuit. And maybe we just missed our chance to take out Turek, but I don't think so. I'm wondering if somebody found out where we were going and that was a tight formation of his ships.
You mean a leak from Mackenzie?
Kai felt stupid for not having thought this through before. Not necessarily. Turek knew we left Boxtop with you. The logical destination was your home planet. He must know Stella's in Cascadia and that I'd go there. This is on the logical route. All it would take is one person on your home world telling him when we left. Would you vouch for everyone in your system?
No. But I don't like the idea that we might have a leak somewhere, or that there was someone to intercept and act on it so quickly. If that was pursuit, they were within an hour of us, and they probably know where we're headed next.
Or it could have been someone making a fast transit through because they were worried, having run into that broadcast somewhere else. Have to say, I'm glad you decided to leave, though, just in case.
Let's look at the rest of what we pulled off the Ansible. I'm sure the others are.
The first, time-stamped only shortly after Turek's broadcast, were simply comments on it. But down the stack came more disturbing reports. One of Salyon's two manned Ansible stations had been blown, apparently by local terrorists, with the loss of all its personnel. A second message from Turek made it clear that this was because they had harbored ships from Bissonette's militia, and that he would do worse to anyone who supported an allied force opposing him.
They deserve it, after the way he treated you.
Nobody deserves it, even when it makes a tidy picture.
Notice this is the second time he's mentioned an allied force. I think he's realized that potential because you've bested his people twice now. If he has agents on Slaughter Key, and it would be smart to assume he does, he may know Slaughter Key privateers have been ordered to Cascadia. Or agents at intermediate stops or on Cascadia may see a buildup.
Despite his conviction that Cascadia Station was safe, Toby had no intention of making Stella angry enough to forbid his going out at all. He told his escort where he was going and did not object when they fell in behind him. Everyone knew the O'Keefe Ice Cream Palace. Everyone knew it was the place lots of students met in the evenings, just as they knew that ice cream had multiple meanings, not all related to frozen treats. He had been there before, many times. Zori would be there at 1945, she'd said.
He slid into a booth and ordered as usual, 5 variations on the theme of chocolate. She didn't expect him to wait for her. She'd order her own when she arrived. His 2 escorts watched the chaos with obvious disdain as he ate. He could imagine what they were thinking. Kids, noise, silliness, stupidity, possible infractions of the code of courtesy.
Not your crowd. Older kids.
Zori won't want to stay here if it's this noisy. Her security...
Her parents insisted she have an escort in the evenings, though by day they let her travel alone. One of Toby's escorts stepped nearer to him. The other looked toward the entrance. One of the employees, an older man, bustled toward Toby.
Excuse me. Can you help, please? I've put in a call for help, but these ruffians...
The escorts glanced at each other, then at Toby.
We're on duty.
I'll stay here. Promise.
Do that. Do not leave this booth.
And they were off, wading into the thickening crowd.
A complimentary drink with our thanks.
Toby glanced up.
Thanks, but...
A fine spray tingled on his face. Down a lengthening dark tunnel, he saw, very clearly, the tiny face of the man who had sprayed him. Zori and her escort got to the O'Keefe Ice Cream Palace a few minutes late, thanks to the squad of station peacekeepers blocking the short route there. Zori led the way around, through a narrow passage, and emerged in the wider service passage as the back door opened and 3 men in white carried someone out on a litter. Someone with Toby's hair. Toby's face. Pale, but Toby.
Toby!
The men glanced at her, put on speed, and hustled their burden into a utility vehicle with sanitation department stenciled on one side.
Wait!
Zori tried to run toward the vehicle as the men piled in, but her escort grabbed her arm and pulled her back.
Let me go!
Zori struggled, but could not get free before the vehicle vanished off down the service passage. Zori put enough distance between them that she could see her escort's face clearly.
That was Toby, you idiot! I was meeting him here, you know that! Something happened! I have to find him! Follow them!
You can't do that. I have my orders from your father. To O'Keefe's and back from O'Keefe's and nowhere else.
But it was Toby! Someone took him! He was hurt or dead or... I have to go see his cousin. She has to know.
I'm sure if he's been injured, the receiving clinic will notify her. Do you want to go in or shall we return home?
That wasn't an ambulance. You know that. Someone snatched him. I'm going to call her.
Not for the first time, Zori wished her father had let her have a skull phone module in her implant. He'd always said there were enough phones around that she didn't need one.
No. You're going home. Now.
Zori stared at him. Not since she'd been a small child had any of her escorts used that tone. She felt a shiver pass down her back, an icy current. The man's fingers twitched, moving toward a pocket in his jacket. Thoughts raced through her head, almost too fast to pick up, far too fast to analyze. Without letting her gaze waver from his face, she thought about options. The back door to O'Keefe's was only a few strides away, and she was fast. But she'd have to turn. He was too big. She could not push past him to follow Toby. Sideways, along the passage they'd come, but it was narrow and had that sharp jink, and if he caught her from behind...
Pardon, please!
The voice from inside O'Keefe's took the escort's intent off her for an instant. Zori slid 1 foot back, then the other.
Have you seen anything of a boy? About 16, coming this way?
Zori recognized Toby's escort.
No.
Yes?
From the corner of her eye, she saw her escort lunge toward her. She jumped back, whirled, and ran. She wanted to scream, but she couldn't scream and run. Toby's escort, startled, stepped out of her way. And she plunged into the staff area of O'Keefe's, shoving her way through a crowd of people, some in waiter's aprons, some clearly curious and frightened customers. Someone had spilled pink ice cream on the floor. She slipped in it, fell against a work table, and tripped over someone crouched there. She landed hard on one hip. Zori looked at the person she'd fallen over. A younger girl, white-faced, her clothes smeared with pink and brown and yellow. She was trembling.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry.
No offense.
The little girl leaned into Zori and grabbed for her hand. Zori looked around, nothing but legs in that direction. Under the work table was a shelf, partly filled with all metal bowls and pots. Zori pushed some aside, making a space. A childhood memory nagged at her.
There! Get in there and stay there until you hear the station peacekeepers.
Don't leave me, please.
Zori had never seen herself as the nurturing type, but she could not unclench the child's fingers without hurting her.
We need to be careful then. Let's just crawl.
The floor's dirty.
We're already dirty. Come on, hold on to my sleeve so I can crawl.
A short crawl brought them to a door at the far end of the kitchen. Zori put her shoulder to it. It didn't budge. When she looked up, she saw the touchpad of a security lock and the words, pantry, employees only. Back the way they'd come, the crowd heaved and struggled, the back of it retreating toward them. The end of the workspace had no convenient gaps to hide in. Memory burst on Zori. She had been in a kitchen, the kitchen of her childhood home, looking up from this angle. She wasn't supposed to be in there, but Estelle had been cross, pulling her hair as she combed it. And Cook, who didn't like Estelle, would probably let her sit on her lap, might even give her a cookie or jam roll. But Cook wasn't there. The child Zori had the idea of hiding in the pantry, waiting for Cook to come back. When footsteps came into the kitchen, she shrank back, leaving the pantry door open just a crack in case it was Estelle and not Cook.
You can't! You can't stop me! I'll tell!
You! You'll tell no one!
You hit me!
Oh, that wasn't a hit. That was a promise. Remember what I told you.
My family!
Your family's a long way away. I'm here. And if you leave, what do you think will happen to the child?
Mama crying, Daddy angry. Child Zori couldn't stand it. She'd opened the door. She'd said something she couldn't remember. She'd seen her mother, hand pressed to her face, crying. Her father whirling around, his face shifting in an instant from a terrifying mask of rage to the familiar smile, his hand opening to lay something she had not seen what on the counter.
Ah, Zori, you little minx. What are you doing in the kitchen at this hour?
Warm and welcoming, he'd held out his arms. She'd run to him, already sobbing in fright and confusion.
What? Did you want a cookie? Did Estelle scold you?
She tucked her head into his shoulder. He felt the same as always. The big, warm shoulder, the broad, strong hands, gentle, comforting, as they supported her. She lifted her head, seeing, through a blur of tears, her mother's white face, a shaking hand pressed against one cheek.
Don't be scared, little bird. You're safe with me. Your mother's just upset.
He turned to look at her, facing Zori away from her mother.
Now, my dear, don't you see you scared the child?
She relaxed into his arms.
Zori, I'm sorry if I scared you. Your father is quite right. But you should not be running into the kitchen for treats between meals. I'll speak to Estelle.
Oh, let the child have a cookie.
With his thumb, he gently lifted her chin, wiped away the last tears.
Cheer up, little bird. If I say you can have a cookie, even your mother has to agree.
Of course. One of the plain...
Chocolate. One of the special ones. This time.
The chocolate cookie had melted in her mouth, the flavor so rare and tantalizing that she had not noticed anything odd in the sleepy feeling, the softening of memory's sharp edges. Until now. She could hardly breathe as that and other memories long buried unfolded and changed her known past.
I'm scared. I'm Zori, high scared.
It was all she could think of in the turmoil. But the girl's face relaxed for an instant.
That's silly. My name's Horden. I am scared. Why aren't the peacekeepers here?
I don't know. Maybe...
Everyone, hands on your heads. Stand where you are. Do not attempt to run.
We aren't standing. Can I just hold your hand?
Zori didn't want to be seen any sooner than necessary. This was as good an excuse as any.
Lie down. I'll lie down with you.
All right. Everybody move to the other room. Come on, keep moving. Sir, we'll take your statement outside. Go to the other room, please.
Very shortly, she was looking up at two peacekeepers in full riot gear, their face shields pushed back.
Are you hurt?
Always tell the truth when you can, her father had said.
I fell. I think I'm just bumped around.
She pushed herself up to sitting and shook her head when he offered her a hand up, turning instead to Horden.
Can you stand up now, Horden?
Is this your child?
No, sir. I fell over her. I was worried about her. I don't think she's badly hurt, though. We tried to crawl into a safe place, but there wasn't one.
These two aren't part of it, but we'll still have to take ID.
The little girl was sitting up, her lower lip trembling.
My name is Horden Amanus, and we live at 342A, Branch 3, Twig 27. I don't mean to be impolite.
Tears tracked down her face, through the dust and streaks of food from the floor. Zori put an arm around her shoulders.
It's all right, Horden. No one's blaming you.
You know her, then?
No, sir. I fell over her when I was trying to get away, and then I thought she might be hurt, so we introduced ourselves.
Horden's hand in Zori's no longer trembled. Her tears were drying.
I said I was scared, and she said, I'm Zori. Hello, scared. And then I said, that's silly, and I told her my name. She was nice to me. I didn't want her to leave, and she held my hand.
Well, that's very good, Sarita. Can you stand up if we help you?
I think so.
With the peacekeeper's help, both of them stood. Zori looked down at her clothes and shook her head.
What a mess. Horden, we both need a change of clothes.
And your name, Sarah?
I'm Zori Luari. And when you found Horden's parents or guardian, I need to talk to you.
Well, surely you aren't going to tell me you started this riot.
No, sir. But I do know something which you should know. Not for a child's ears.
Horden pulled her hand out of Zori's.
I'm not just a child.
Of course not, Horden. But you know, there are things that must be confidential. It's that kind of thing. It would be rude to speak it here.
Horden looked thoughtful a moment, then nodded.
Oh.
Were you here alone, Sarita?
Yes, sir. Mama let me come to get a soda, but I was supposed to come home right away. Only there were grown-ups who got angry and started a fight. And the lady who brought my soda said come with her, and she brought me here and was going to call my family, only then all these people came into the kitchen.
The peacekeeper tapped his head to indicate a skull phone.
Well, we've contacted your family. Your mother's on her way. If you just go out front with Willem, do you need Sarah Luari to come with you?
No, sir. Peacekeepers are our friends.
Horden smiled at Zori.
Thank you, Sarah, for letting me hold your hand when I got scared. My mama will want to thank you, too.
It was my pleasure. Be well, Horden.
The other peacekeeper took Horden's hand and led her out of the kitchen.
Well, Sarah?
I came here with my family's permission and an escort to have an ice cream with a young man in my class at school. We were to meet at 1945. I was a few minutes late. There was congestion out front, so I came through the back way. And just as we came inside of the back entrance, I saw three men carrying out someone strapped to a litter. Unconscious. It was my friend. I tried to stop them, but my escort pulled me back. For my safety, I thought. But then, when I wanted to call my friend's guardian, he told me not to.
I'm not sure what...
Sir, please. My friend should have had two escorts with him. His guardian insists because they were attacked elsewhere. I saw his escorts come out after the men who took him were out of sight.
Carrying him?
No, in a vehicle with a sanitation logo on the side.
You're sure it was your friend?
Of course I'm sure. Ask his... Where are his escorts? Didn't they speak to you?
But what's his name, Sarah?
Toby Vata. His guardian's Stella Vata, of Vata...
Yeah, I know who Stella Vata is. Sarah, I think we better get you home. We can interview you later.
No!
That came out louder than Zori intended. From his expression, he found it rude.
Excuse me. I intend no discourtesy. But please, listen to me. My escort... My father insists on an escort in the evenings. There was something wrong about him. He didn't just stop me from intervening when those men took Toby. He told me I could not call Toby's cousin, Sarah Vata, and he reached for his weapon.
Your escort is dead. He appears to have shot one of the boys' escorts, and then the other shot him. I cannot speak more about that. The survivor is being interrogated. I would have thought, though, that your escort thought he was protecting you. And even if he wasn't,
Your parents are still...
Please, please forgive my interruption. No discourtesy was intended. I think my father did it. Had it done.
What did your father do?
Took Toby.
You think your father had the boy kidnapped just because you and he are friends?
No. Because he invented the shipboard Ansible that can communicate with system Ansibles.
I think you'd better speak to my supervisor.
Zori was beginning to feel very shaky indeed.
I'll be glad to.
He escorted her to the front door, provided a privacy hood, and handed her to another peacekeeper who opened the door of a squat vehicle. Inside, she joined four others, all shrouded in privacy hoods like hers, and in moments they were moving. No one spoke. Zori tried to use the time to sort her thoughts.
What really happened? What does it mean? Is my father really guilty of whatever happened to Toby? Just because the escort made that move? Just because of that flash of memory in the kitchen? And where is Toby? And what is happening to him?
She felt her shoulders jerk and tried to still them. She couldn't help Toby directly. She had to wait, had to talk to the right person, say the right things. Toby never quite lost consciousness, and the long, dark tunnel that engulfed him at O'Keefe's shortened and spat him out into awareness that he was swaddled in a wrap, held tight by restraints. He tried to speak, but he could not move his jaw or his tongue. He could not even move his eyes. He stared almost straight up at the inside of a vehicle of some kind. A face moved into his line of vision.
Coming too, are you? You'll find you can't move.
If I can't move, if they paralyzed me, how am I breathing?
All at once, he was conscious of something in his throat, of pressure on his chest.
You're on a respirator. Just keep that in mind, boy. If we turn it off, you die.
Toby wanted to say something, explain to someone that it wasn't his fault, that he had done everything he was supposed to, but he couldn't.
Oh, Stella must be frantic. Does she even know? Where are my escorts? Where's Zori? Is she also a captive? Or hurt? Will Stella blame Zori when she finds out I'm missing?
The men, he could now see their bodies when they leaned over to unhook his stretcher from the vehicle, worked swiftly. One of them laid a jacket over his face, blinding him. He could just see light through the weave of the cloth. He told himself to think, to observe, but he heard nothing identifiable. They carried him through a door and along what he thought was a narrow corridor. When the man pulled the jacket off his face, Toby saw a bright light directly overhead, painfully bright. The man leaned over him again and sprayed something on his eyes. His vision blurred, but that did not dim the light enough for comfort.
That gel keeps your eyes from drying out. The paralysis won't wear off for hours. You're safe enough here. When you move, the instruments will tell us, and we'll have a little chat. Have a pleasant evening.
He moved out of Toby's view.
What's going to happen to me? To Zori?
He had a few moments of panic, but with the suddenness of a switch being thrown, it vanished, replaced by the familiar alert concentration he felt when working on a new technical problem.
Something in the drug? Shouldn't I still be too scared to think?
Rafe had said something about that, about the ability to wall off the fear and think through problems. Toby tested that with a math problem from that morning's class. Whatever this detachment was, it wasn't simply inability to think. If he could think, he should be able to get himself out of this somehow. His skull phone wouldn't work without being able to use the tiny muscles in his throat.
Can I detect surveillance in the room with my implant?
He started testing that. Obligingly, his implant produced a wireframe display of the room, with little red dots where instruments were located. That included the surface on which he lay, a medical sensor pad measuring vital functions.
Oh, what's it telling them?
His implant also monitored his vital functions. Respirations controlled at 12 per minute, heart rate 80, faster than his own normal. Normal temperature, blood chemistry. Toby would have frowned in concentration if he'd been able to.
Last semester's chemical database was still in his implant. It displayed the structure of the molecules that held him captive, and how to break them apart as well, in the implant's biochemical hierarchy. But the room's sensors would tell his captors if he moved. They would come back. That could be worse. Maybe patience would be the best tactic here. Stella would find him. Someone had to know by now he was missing. He refused to think about the alternative, but he could not help thinking of Zori. Of course she wasn't. She hadn't. But the same men who had captured him might have captured her, and Stella wouldn't be as concerned about Zori. He had to get free and make sure Zori was safe. Meanwhile, the light boring into his helpless eyes hurt more and more with every boring minute. So did the tube in his throat.
Maybe my implant can at least fox the medical pad.
His implant told him that the med pad's data report function was hard-cabled to some external location, with safeguard functions to detect RF interference in the usual ranges. Yet the data collection function needed RF sensitivity to the electrical emissions of his own body. He could interfere there, at the source, at least as long as his implant's transmissions matched the parameters the med pad had been programmed to pick up. He queried, feeding the merest trickle of power to the external channel, and the pad responded, reporting a fictional heartbeat. That worked. Excitement made his heart speed up. He hoped his captors would think it was from fear and pain. The light boring into his eyes, the choking feel of the tube in his throat, had to be fixed next. He had access to his implant's biocontrols. That meant access to conditioned sleep, pain management for both acute and chronic pain, even complete sensory decoupling. That came with major warning flags. Not a good idea. But interfering with pain signals from his eyes and throat seemed safe enough. Immediate relief. Toby felt a burst of confidence.
Now what?
Control the entire med pad output. If he could do that, then he could deconstruct the paralyzing drug most of the way without revealing changes in metabolism. Toby defined the parameters and instructed his implant to insert them into the data stream. Then he damped his throat's sensitivity to the tube even further. If he could break down the paralyzing chemical, the first natural movement would be a gag reflex and a blink, something the video surveillance would pick up. He had to appear to be paralyzed right up to the moment he was ready to take on whatever came next. Then he set to work on the chemical problem.
Can the reaction products from breaking down the paralyzing drug counteract the effects of hours of immobilization? Strength? Agility? What else?
You what?
Stella glared at Toby's escort and the peacekeeper that accompanied him. The escort was a mass of bruises, scrapes, and cuts.
He was abducted. And yes, Sarah, I know we've given you ample cause for anger. Dwyerman is dead. Died in his defense. I hope you will remember.
When I have time to remember, I will honor his sacrifice. But right now, Toby is in danger.
We are searching for him. We have a good description of the abductors and the vehicle from Zori Luari.
Her! I knew there was something.
Sarah, she has been most helpful. She told us to contact you at once. She has refused to return to her parents' home and wishes to see you.
The last thing Stella wanted to see was a hysterical teenage girl in love, whether she was guilty of anything else or not.
I don't have time.
But the man was already nodding at the door. Zori rushed in.
I have to see you. You have his dog. You have to get his dog.
Rascal? Why?
Toby told me about it. About his dog at home, where he came from. He said it could follow scent. It could find anyone it knew. Rascal can follow his trail and find him. They won't think of that. We don't have any other dogs on the station.
Stella wondered for a moment if it could work.
Zori, not all dogs can track. I don't think Rascal's that kind of dog. Dogs bred to follow scent or a different breed.
Tears glittered in Zori's eyes.
But Rascal loves him. We have to try. We can't just let him disappear. What if they put him in a ship and take him away?
It's a dog, Sarah. Isn't it true that dogs can track individuals through cities even?
some dogs.
It was at least an idea, better than some. Stella patted Zori's shoulder, feeling at least 60.
Zori, you really should go home.
I can't. I think my father... I told them.
Sarah Lawari has made accusations against her father. Until those allegations are resolved, it would be better for her to have no contact with her parents.
He gave Stella a meaningful look. It took her a long pause to catch on.
Oh, no. You want me to take her in? In the middle of all this?
Well, it would be a great kindness, and in accordance with our customs.
That sounded more like a forced exchange of hostages than a kindness.
It might be helpful in our investigation of your cousin's disappearance. Sarah Lawari seems to be linked to more than one problem. Otherwise, I'm afraid she'll have to stay in protective custody in jail, and we have no facilities for that, really.
I don't think I can take responsibility for another juvenile. Not when I've already lost one.
Well, you will have our assistance. Please, Sarah.
Zori looked at her, tears obvious. Stella could not ignore that any more than she could have ignored Toby.
But is it legal?
You will become her warden under our regulations governing protective custody.
The problem I see is that my ward was abducted and his escorts attacked, one of them killed. I'm not sure I can keep Zori safe if someone comes after her, and her family certainly may.
We will notify her family that she is in protective custody. They will understand what that means under our laws and customs. We will provide additional security for you, quite reasonable as your cousin was abducted, and this should deter potential attackers. You are free to use your own security service as well and make such additional arrangements as seem best. We would recommend that she not attend school tomorrow.
Very well. I would like an official vehicle with shielding for our return to my apartment. Whoever went after Toby may have intended to go after Zori as well. And she needs a chance to clean up and get some rest.
I don't need rest.
Are you sure the dog can't help us find him?
An idea glimmered in the back of Stella's mind. She needed time alone to figure it out.
Not absolutely certain. And it is an idea to be tried, perhaps.
Back in the apartment, Stella prepared for whatever might come next, opening the first drawer of a locked cabinet to look at the array of knives there.
I didn't know you had weapons. You're a businesswoman.
Stella considered the row of weapons in the next drawer and chose two.
That's true, but even businesswomen may have weapons.
Toby said you weren't just a...
Just a pretty face.
In the same drawer was a complicated web harness. Stella eeled into it, attached holsters, and slid the weapons home, then removed them and laid them out on the desk.
That's been useful, Zori, a few times in my life. People see the pretty face, the yellow hair, and they think that's all I am.
I didn't mean to insult you.
Stella locked that drawer and opened the next, each compartment stocked with a different ammunition.
I'm not insulted. I'm flattered that a girl your age would think me pretty. You're beautiful yourself, and you know it. Often that creates a rivalry.
I'm not... You think I'm beautiful?
Don't be silly.
Stella loaded the propellant canister in one weapon, then the flechettes, their tips translucent. In the other, a roll of thin wire.
Do you know what these are?
No.
The flechettes are high-velocity chemstun rounds, the highest concentration allowed to non-law enforcement personnel. The rolls are tangle tie. Expand on impact, stick to anything until they harden, which takes 5 seconds. None of this is lethal, thus none of it is illegal. Never be illegal if you don't have to. That's what my Aunt Grace always said.
Your Aunt Grace? Toby said she's now the Rector of Defense of Slatterkey.
The same Aunt Grace.
Zori looked at Stella's sleeve, which showed no bulge beneath it.
And the, blades?
Insurance.
Zori eyed the drawers with more eagerness than Stella had expected.
What am I supposed to have?
A good night's sleep, Zori. You will be quite safe here with all the security around the place.
You can't expect me to stay here while Toby's in danger.
I expect you to do exactly that. I'm not risking your life, too, and I don't need to worry about you in a tight situation.
But I'm the one who thought of using Rascal.
And I'm grateful for the idea, but Zori, you have no training.
I can handle a weapon. I have my own pistol at home.
Stella took the girl by both shoulders. Stiff, resistant shoulders.
Zori, I don't doubt your courage, your intelligence, or your willingness to help. But I've done this sort of thing before. I got Toby away alive from people who wanted to kill him at Alray. and I will have trained, experienced personnel with me. I need to know you're safe. Toby needs to know you're safe. Yes, this is the boring part, but the boring part is useful too.
Zori's stubborn expression didn't change.
There is something you can do. Something very important.
What's that?
I have the transcript of a message sent by pirates, intercepted by my cousin Kai during a battle. Toby recognized some of the words as those you'd taught him, but he can't read the whole thing. Would you give it a try?
It's really important.
So far, only the pirates understand pirate jargon. If we had a translation...
Yes. I can see that might help, and it's something to do while you find Toby. I know I couldn't sleep.
And Zori, whatever you do, do not contact anyone outside. Not your family, not friends, no one.
But if I want to tell you something?
I can't risk it breaking my concentration. Believe me, I want Toby back safe as much as you do. Do the translation if you can, Zori.
Stella finished her preparations, put a lead on Rascal's collar, and picked him up. He squirmed a bit, then settled into the crook of her arm. In the next room, she briefed the two men she had chosen from her private security to come along. The corridor outside was quiet. The single apparent guard was, Stella knew, only one of many in the area. She made her way to O'Keefe's, where she was allowed in after a brief check with police headquarters.
According to his escort, he was sitting here, Sarah.
Stella put Rascal down next to the booth. He scampered over to a puddle of melted ice cream on the floor and started lapping at it.
Rascal, no. Find Toby.
Rascal glanced up, rolling his eyes and flattening his ears, took a last swipe at the puddle, and lunged for a lump on the floor that might have been part of a sandwich, dragging at the leash.
Oh, Rascal!
He had the lump, whatever it was, and gulped it down, then dashed in another direction, winding the leash around Stella's legs, scrabbling at the floor.
Rascal, wait a minute!
Stella followed him, unwinding the leash with the sense of time passing. She knew, she'd been told, where Toby was sitting, over there on the left, and that Toby was taken out the back of the place, through the service area and kitchen. Rascal showed no interest in either the booth or the most likely path to the service area. This wasn't going to work. She herself had no experience with dogs that followed scent trails, but the ones she'd read about kept their noses to the ground, and the trail made sense. Rascal looked eager and excited, head up, pulling hard toward the far side of the room at first, but then veering aside to grab another lump off the floor. This time, Stella could see the bit of meat in it.
It's not working. He's just fooling around. I warned them he might not be able to do this.
The girl said it was a sanitation van, but there are hundreds on the station.
Sarah Vada!
Stella turned to see a policeman waving at her from near the entrance. Her heart clenched. When she came nearer, she saw that he had a data pad with a visual display up.
Sarah, we have a little information, not much. This is combined from the station gravity report and two surveillance vids. A vehicle massing approximately the same as a sanitation hauler and four adults. Not on the normal route of a sanitation vehicle in this branch, but taking this route.
It was highlighted in yellow, Stella saw, inward to the trunk, and up two branches, out almost to the tip, spinward.
It passed through these eight vids on that route, but only two were functioning. We are attempting to ascertain the cause of that malfunction.
Enemy action, of course, but they were being correct and polite.
Thank you for sharing this information. If you'll excuse me...
Sarah, you should go home and wait. We'll keep you informed.
Stella smiled, nodded, and left the mess behind. She turned to her escort once they had cleared the line outside.
Get us backup.
Sarah, you aren't going to...
I want medical, some heavy...
Sarah!
I am not going to go home and wait. That child will not die or be taken off this station because I did nothing.
The escort opened his mouth, then shut it, and instead punched at his data pad. Stella led the way through the still crowded corridors toward the trunk. The quickest way up station was the airlifts, which she normally avoided because the pressure changes made her sinuses ache, but this time...
Sarah, for your safety...
Gans, I'm wearing armor, and I'm armed. And I'm going.
The airlift tube spat them out on the correct branch, and Stella quickly reoriented to the branch layout. Ahead, she saw a meaningful bustle, Vehicles, pedestrians, some in uniform.
Did they find him?